Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. I have a very interesting guest. You knew I was going to say that. And every time I say that to you, I always deliver, I think. We'll find out. And you can hear her. She's already ready. She's in the bullpen. She's ready to get on the show. Monica Wofford. Monica, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, David. I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Well, we're delighted you're here, and we need your help. Monica is, she's got an MBA in 2003. She's done a lot of speaking in her career. Thousands and thousands of students, lots of recognition. She's written the book, several books, actually, and we're going to talk about a couple of them, but they are so relevant to where we are today with people changing jobs, people taking different roles, people taking on new responsibilities, and all of a sudden they find that they are no longer a peer. Now they're a boss. And how in the world do people deal with that? Well, that's one of the topics that she covers in her book, Contagious Leadership, Learning the Art of Successful Leadership, 10-step program. Thank God we need that. So Monica, help us out. First of all, anything else you want to know about you before we get into the meat and the potatoes of our interview today?
Hey, I've learned a lot about me. I appreciate that insight. That was all helpful reminders.
Outstanding. Don't wish that journey on anybody else.
No kidding. You also brought up a great point that leads us to this peer-to-boss, buddy-to-boss sort of transition that a lot of people are making right now, in that you mentioned the MBA. And one of the struggles that I find most often, particularly with our coaching clients, if they're transitioning from peer to boss, they tend to lean on those things that are authoritative in nature, like the MBA, the credentials, the power they now have from that new title. And that's not one of the most effective ways to build rapport, respect, and value from those you lead. So right off the bat, that's a stumbling block that most people encounter in that transition.
That's good to know, because
by the water cooler.
Yeah, so people need to look at other ways of, and this, of course, the website contagiouscompanies.com. People can go there and check out all the books, because you've got several you've written. What are some of the simple solutions or approach that somebody can take to better equip themselves to make that transition and, you know, deal with, it's all about relationships, right?
It is all about relationships. Unfortunately, it is only a 3-step program versus a 12 or 10-step program. So let's get right to it. We'll simplify the process.
Outstanding. First, we need it easy.
Exactly. First thing I'd recommend is to raise their awareness, or what we used to call in the 90s their emotional intelligence, about the attributes, behaviors, natural gifts, skills, and talents of those people they now lead. Because leading people is vastly different than being an individual autonomous performer. And often those skills don't transfer. If you were a star performer and that's what got you the promotion, you know, those skills are no longer relevant when it comes to leading other people to become star performers. So the more they can raise their awareness about who they're leading and what they're about, what they need, what motivates them, et cetera, the more effective they will be. There is actually a tool on the website that's free and available for anyone to take, contagiouscompanies.com/core-snapshot, which allows them to identify a bit about themselves and read up about some other people.
I like that.
Secondly,
you know what? Before you go continue, Monica, I want to get a point in real quick. It kind of just popped into my head as you were describing that. And I said, you know what? Leadership, as you described the first step, is really getting a clear picture of your team and the folks that you're going to be leading. Leadership isn't about telling people what to do every day. That's just kind of a dictatorial order writer and saying, here's what you're doing today. That's an assignment giver. But you're talking about real leadership, where you're leading the person. And to do that, you need to understand where they're coming from.
Absolutely. Leadership, when we talk about it in training programs or in keynote speeches about contagious leadership and other leadership topics we do, is truly about the privileged opportunity to develop, guide, grow, enhance the effectiveness of the people you now have the responsibility for monitoring their performance. Nowhere in there does it say your primary role is to give direction. Yes, that's a function you would take on, but that is not the primary role of a leader. It's a very people-focused role versus task-focused. And frankly, if one doesn't like people, you may want to consider turning down the promotion.
Yeah. Stick with what you do well. And well,
exactly.
And, you know, and I think also, you know, as you speak about that, in a large enough company, these things are, if they're going to be dealt with, they can be easily dealt with staffing and how companies make changes and things like that. But for the small business owner, who is the owner and the marketer and the driver, and then they have maybe family involved and or you've got people that maybe have been with the company for a long term, or somebody who's made a big contribution to the company, you say, hey, you know what? You're going to get more opportunity, more responsibility. I need you to do this. they may not have those skills at all. And so there may be a rub there that maybe in looking at your teachings with the Contagious Leadership and some of the other materials, to at least for them to be as good as they can be if they aren't a natural born leader.
You couldn't be more correct. And one of the things I'll tie into here is that we work with a couple of family businesses. Now, that doesn't alone mean that it is a small-sized company. We work with one chain in California that's upwards of $200 million in revenue. So they're a significant business, still privately held, still family-owned, and have some of the same dynamics of promoting one's brother-in-law or sister-in-law or son and those kinds of cultural issues that come up in family businesses. But then also the smaller business that is even under $1 million or under $10 million encounter some of these same dynamics when they provide someone with those additional responsibilities. Not only do they get a new title, not only might they not be well suited for that particular job or role, but this second step that I was going to recommend and will recommend for transitioning more effectively involves the issue of confidence. There are a lot of people who will accept more responsibility, accept a promotion, a title, a bigger office, for the sake of it temporarily boosting their confidence. And in order to be an effective leader, one must have a reasonably elevated sense of confidence in the long term, not just in the moment where you sign the maybe contract for your new position or get your new paycheck. It's something that is continually worked on by leaders, because the more confident you are, not cocky, confident, the more adept you will become at modifying your style temporarily to meet the needs of others, the less you'll take other people's behavior personally or quickly label it as difficult, the more effective you'll be in communicating, because all the nuances and stress and little things that happen in day-to-day business won't affect you as much as someone who might suffer from a lower sense of confidence or self-esteem.
Outstanding. Well, Monica's putting it right on the table. These are essential elements for leadership. Monica Wofford is our guest. The website is contagiouscompanies.com. Quick break. We'll come back and talk about that very important third element or step. Stay right there.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, Monica Wofford. I'm saying it right, correct?
You are.
Okay, I want to make sure. Well, it's got an O in it, so I want to say that O, but I got to get the A in there. So Monica Wofford's our guest. She is a leadership development expert. Lord, I wish I'd met you 16 years ago when I started my company. But you live, you learn.
Never too late.
And it's not too late.
Never too late.
I'm looking forward to getting my own copy of your book, because I could use some contagious leadership myself. I see where you're coming from. So we got to know about the emotional intelligence and the, beyond just the skills, but the emotional intelligence of our team. Leadership obviously involves not only that initial boost, but that permanent confidence you talk about, which I think I get that because, in that role, that leader has got to be confident. If you don't have that confidence, boy, that perceived weakness will really bring a company down.
It's a good point you bring up, and I'll interject here for a quick second. It's not just the perceived weakness, and this gets a lot of leaders in trouble, because perceived weakness could manifest itself in having to admit, as the leader, you don't know all the answers. Heaven forbid you should have to say, I don't know, to an employee.
Right,
person.
Right.
It's not just perceived weakness. It's about confidence in one's own ability, because otherwise, you start making decisions based on whether they'll like me, whether they'll respect me, whether or not they'll create a conflict, whether or not this will be difficult or easy to handle. And those decision criteria are not usually most effective for the business or the team, for that matter.
That's a very good point. Well, okay, so now that sets the stage for your third and final step or component here to the leadership.
Which is all about demonstrating the actual level of confidence that you've achieved. So if we recap, step one is raising your awareness of all the other attributes, behavior, skills, and talents of those you lead, those you have the privilege of leading now in this new position. Secondly would be to raise or elevate your own confidence level. And then third is to actively demonstrate that confidence. And that doesn't mean walking around with, the the rooster chest puffed out and your
no
feathers
peacocks
all puffed
allowed.
Up and exactly. Look at me, I'm the boss. Ooh, yay. That's a fast way to get some disrespect. The demonstration of confidence comes more so in the willingness to listen to those who need to tell you the story before they get to the point. The willingness to maybe give a little when the salesperson comes to you and makes magnanimous promises to their customer that you know are nothing like the parameters you set for that salesperson. Okay, understand they need to get appreciated. So be confident enough to get that, but then also set boundaries for the next transaction. Be confident enough to make the tough decisions and immediately share the tough news that you might prefer or find it easier to keep close to your vest so that it doesn't upset anybody's feelings or hurt anybody on the team. It's all of those attributes that are going to demonstrate one has a sense of confidence, and people are attracted to those who have a high sense of authentic confidence, hence partly why it's called contagious leadership, because everything a leader does rubs off on other people, including confidence.
Absolutely, because if they don't have that, then it's going to be a nervousness, it's going to be a fear. Those are bad ingredients for a healthy work environment.
You got it. They make the leader and all those people they work with to be, quickly become difficult people, and then they'll need a whole different book.
Well, you know, we'll get to that one. I saw that when I was going on your website, make difficult people disappear. I know that everybody on the planet says, boy, if I had that book and it really worked, boy, we'd be in business. I got to ask you, before we get to that, Monica, I got to ask you about one of the real, I think, challenges in, again, small businesses is that buddy to and peer to supervisor or boss. I mean, you know, when somebody makes that transition, I think one of the obvious questions people would have for you, and they'd love for me to ask you, so I'll ask you, is how is it possible for them to maintain the formal relationship or some elements of it so they don't lose their friend? And for both the person getting promoted and then the person who's staying where they are, how do each of them
absolutely
keep that?
Yeah, the answer to that definitively, without question, is absolutely they can still stay friends.
Okay.
If the expectations are realigned, the boundaries are set, and the communication is clear. Because when one becomes a boss versus just a buddy, when you're now the boss people at the water cooler are talking about, and you're not standing at the water cooler anymore, there is a different dynamic. And those who have the maturity and the ability to make that transition, both the promoted and the still remaining frontline employees, will still be able to be friends. You, as the new boss, would want to set new boundaries. Okay, Joe, this is what we used to talk about when we hung out on Friday nights and had our fun time together. I'm no longer able to talk about these following areas. Just want to make sure you're clear with that, because if you bring them up, I'm going to have to say, yeah, can't help you there. What's your next question?
Yeah.
And if you realign the expectations, they're not going to treat you exactly the same. They'll still be your friend, but they're not going to treat you exactly the same way as they did when you were an equal peer. And being okay with that is part of being confident. But if you can manage to do those things, then you can still maintain the friendship and not violate ethics policies or good business practice in the office.
That's a great point, Monica. If you're just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, Monica Wofford is giving us just the lesson on how all this stuff works with intra-company relationships and boss peer and buddy-to-boss relationships. And I'm going to take a quick break and come back. I want to talk a little bit about some more of those kinds of relationships and how we can make the most of that environment. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we are back with Monica Wofford, and she is a contagious, overflowing fountain of information about this workplace environment and these relationships. Because, you know, the thing that really struck me as you were describing it, Monica, is I was like, you know what? What about the boss above this? For example, in my company, I have 12 people that work with me, and we're going to need to add a person or two here because we are growing, and thankfully, and we have a high demand for our services right now. And so I need to shuffle people around. What's your advice to me, the owner, when I am making a change? How can I help make that where I'm putting a person over another person who have both been either peers or whatever the case may be? What do you say to the owner about how to help make that process work as smoothly as it can?
I think based on what you shared with me earlier before we started the actual show, go to daveholland.com, download this radio show.
And listen to it, right?
Actually, yes, exactly. The owner would be the leader of leaders in this case.
Yeah.
And what you would want to ensure you're doing is helping to develop those that report to you. So when you promote someone who's now going to be in a position that's hierarchically higher than the frontline employee, is to give them the same kind of guidance we've talked about today, raising their emotional intelligence, raising their confidence, demonstrating their confidence, but then also communicating about those expectations and boundaries and how they're now different. Often when we're working with small and large companies and going through this process, we'll do some job fit analysis and benchmarking as well, using a tool called the CORE Profile. And the shortened, abbreviated version of that that's online that I mentioned earlier, that contagiouscompanies.com/CORE snapshot, will often help people to be able to map out what employees work with them, maybe what quadrant they think they fit in most dominantly. Obviously, with a quick device, it's a good guess, but you may not have enough intel. But once you do that, then you also can look at the job description. Is the job for which you're about to promote someone in need of certain attributes, skills, and behaviors? Of course, is usually the answer. We'll match up those attributes and behaviors with the personality preference you think that person demonstrates naturally, and you'll have a great fit. If you try to put someone who's very analytical, for example, and very reserved and not very expressive, as the head customer service department where you need someone who's got a lot of enthusiasm, energy, and real people orientation to take care of customers, that's not a good fit.
So that's a good point.
You want to look at those things as well.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. Yeah, because I can see from the corner office chair that the leader of leaders needs to do all the things that you describe and inspire them and make sure that as you place them in that role that, you know, you're going to then develop and nurture them and also allow them to do their role. And what I was kind of thinking about is also not interfering, because, you know, if you've got that friendship component between the boss, the newly promoted boss, and the what was the peer who's now the subordinate, you know, you need to let them work out their new relationship, you know, not get in the middle, so to speak, while that's trying to gel. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And that can be one of the more difficult interactions to implement, because particularly in a small business, I would say 100 employees or less, if the frontline employees are used to going to the top CEO in that corner office, then not only does the person you promote get stuck in the middle and often be perceived as the bad guy because they're trying to close the door to your office,
right?
It becomes delicate. So both parties must be involved. The leader of leaders probably would be well served by having a company-wide conversation or employee-wide conversation. All right, I'm bringing this person into this role. Here are the reasons why. Here's their responsibilities. Here's what they will be doing now that I will not be doing.
While I'm hiding.
Maybe clarifying. Yeah,
I'm going to be hiding from you all. So go talk to this person. No, that's very good. Because, well, I think we can't assume that everybody gets it. I think there needs to be this very deliberate conversation.
And when we do assume is when we have a lot of problems. That's the number one element that I work with a lot of leaders on, and many of the members of the company I lead, is helping them to realize what is natural and assumed by us is not natural and assumed by everybody else. But there again, we go back to this emotional intelligence piece, which sounds like it drives everything, and in truth really does drive a lot of behavior. But we all walk around with a natural bias. We assume everybody handles things much the same way we do. And intuitively, we know that's not the case, or intellectually, I should say.
But we ignore it.
But acting that out is very different.
Yeah, we ignore it. We deliberately ignore it. We say, yeah, I know they're not me, but doggone it, they ought to be.
They ought to be, yeah, because being me, it's so much easier for me to communicate with you.
Exactly. And we wouldn't even need to talk. You just know what I'm thinking. Well,
exactly. Telepathy would be helpful.
It would be fantastic. Boy, the world would be a one big level parking lot in about 2 minutes. But Monica Wofford's our guest, ladies and gentlemen, and she's opening our eyes and ears about what it takes to communicate in the workplace, especially in the employment relation aspect. And we've got one more big topic we want to get to today, Monica, is that's the dealing with difficult people, but you've got a new twist on it, which is making difficult people disappear, and that's the subject of a new book. We're going to take one more quick break, and we'll have Monica come back and talk with us about that. Stay tuned.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
So you've been wanting to get a copy of my book. David Holland here telling you about how to get great advice and avoid scams. Well, you can, of course, get that from my website. But if you're out and about and you'd like to take a look at the book, pick it up, hold it in your hand, stop by Inspirations. John Hill's the owner. It's at 162 South Nova Road in Ormond Beach. And tell him that I sent you. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. If you've been with us today, you've had a treat. Monica Wofford's been our guest, leadership development expert, CEO of Contagious Companies, and the website is contagiouscompanies.com. And Monica's got a new book out. Boy, she's fast. We did one in the first segment, and she's got another one already done. Monica, good job. So the next one...
speedy fingers.
You are fast. So the next one is Make Difficult People Disappear, and you've even trademarked it. I love it. What a great title, because everybody would like to make somebody disappear. And of course, you're not really talking about Houdini work here. You're talking about how to cope, manage, deal, rethink, shift how you view these relationships. And let's just take it straight from right from the workplace we were talking about a minute ago. And how do you identify and work with the personalities in your office? That's a big one, right?
It is a big one. And the only thing in the list of items you mentioned that I would say this book doesn't cover is how to, in fact, deal with difficulty.
Okay.
Dealing with makes them stick around longer and continually be part of your problem.
Oh, you're good.
But if
okay. You're good.
Able to make them disappear.
You're good. You're good. So either you fix it so you don't have to deal with it or you're done.
Yeah. Yes, I've never understood the training classes dealing with difficult people. Who the heck wants to deal with them? I want them to go away. I want this problem out of my face. And I teased the editor not long ago when I wrote the book to make the subtitle, please, 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 make difficult people disappear, .. without going to jail. She wouldn't let me do it.
Yeah,
when you look at it,
I can understand the concern. No, that's good. So are you saying that either we resolve it so it's not something, quote unquote, as you say, that we have to deal with? It's a resolution process. Is that what we're getting at? Or it's a write-off process? Is it kind of those two? Are those our options?
Those are two of many options.
Okay.
This is a 10-chapter book. So there's 10 different steps that you could take. Not in order necessarily. Not all of them are needed. But when you have a difficult person, first of all, getting to the root of the difficulty, what are they doing that's the problem? And then what are you labeling their problem behavior as? Because the moment we label a behavior, your brain is wired to then look for validation for that label.
So that's where we look at everything they do through certain glasses, right?
Because we
want to be right. Being right is more important than a good outcome, isn't it?
Well, we don't argue with our own data.
Yeah.
So if we decide they're difficult, dadgummit, that's what we're looking for.
So every single thing they do, then we interpret that way.
Correct.
Ugh.
That is correct, once we make that label. So once you understand that particular process, you start examining your expectations. And the example I often give is if I were to ask you to describe a Jack Russell, you'd like to give me adjectives of energetic and hyper and jumping around and yappy and little and chasing tennis balls. But if I asked you to describe a German Shepherd, you'd probably say things more like regal, stoic, guard dog, loyal, perhaps scary or intimidating. And what happens is I ask people, well, if you looked at a German Shepherd but expected it to act like a Jack Russell, would you be disappointed? And the answer most likely is, yes, I would.
Yeah.
We do the same thing to people that we work with all the time. We might look at that figurative German Shepherd, if you will, expecting it to act like something it is not, nor will it ever be. yet we continue to have those expectations and force them upon that person, and we're the ones who suffer, and we're the ones who struggle, and then start calling that person difficult because we've decided they should be something they're not.
So in other words, we're the one with the problem, and we're making it their problem.
At times. Okay. It's not all our problem, but it certainly is a two-way street and takes two to tango.
It's about setting proper expectations again, and maybe even changing those expectations when we are working with people, and again, not to use the word dealing, but resolving a situation.
If I were to use five words to describe the entire book, it's about understanding, acceptance, tolerance, awareness, and modification. Make no mistake that working with people that are different than you isn't always a piece of cake. So it takes acceptance and understanding, but then also modifying what is a natural style for you to better fit the needs of that person temporarily so you have effective communication in a work relationship.
Very good, Monica. I'm going to need to get a quantity discount. I need 13 books in my office so we can all read them. Monica,
absolutely.
I know you're going
to... Absolutely. I'll call you later for the address.
Absolutely. I know you're going to be surprised, but we are out of time. It's been a delightful conversation. Monica Wofford, ladies and gentlemen, ContagiousCompanies.com. Monica, I'd love to have you come back for another program, and we'll pick up another subject and encourage people to visit your website and take a look at both of the books we've talked about, The Contagious Leadership and The Making Difficult People Disappear.
I look forward to it, David.
Right.
You've been a delight, and thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.